friends. Chris Sauter, lead pastor at Neighborhood Church. We work hard at creating content every week that is life-giving and inspiring for people to live a full life. So we're inviting people who find this stream to be life-giving and encouraging to consider becoming a sustaining member at Neighborhood Church. That could be a one-time gift or to subscribe monthly. And you can do that at neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Thank you, friends, and enjoy the message. Are in our series called Honest Advent. And Advent, if you're not familiar, is something that has been a spiritual rhythm for an incredibly long time. It's something we don't follow every single tradition here at Neighborhood, but I do like, it's why I like reading the Prayer of Generosity, something that we can do all together in the same space at the same time. It's why I miss doing communion with people. It's why we do baptisms and dedications, something that predates just some hip with an idea that we came up with. And Advent is one of those rhythms, as is Lent. But Advent means to wait in anticipation. And it's like, you know, in the morning, there's gonna be this new day with a new sun and all the beauty that packs, that comes along with a sunrise. And you're waiting in the middle of the night in anticipation of what that beauty is to come. That's Advent. And I was talking with someone who goes to our church. Well, they belong to Neighborhood Church. And her name's Maggie. And I checked in with her and said, "Hi, how's it going?" And we had a good discussion of how good and how hard it is to live in the reality versus what you should be thinking or you should be doing or you should be consuming. And how it's easy to get caught up in the idea of, well, I really should, lose 10 pounds. I really should be more productive. I really should be more stressed out about the Christmas program that's coming out. We have this something inside of us that almost demands that we should be someone we're not, because who we are is not good enough. And whoever, if we could just produce or consume or engage or experience or believe whatever we deem like that thing is, then we're finally good. And how there is freedom and there's liberation, but there's also pain and uncertainty when you can just sit in the reality of what is. Because you might not be so sure. You might not be so confident. You might be really lonely. And that's not always a threat. And the real you is beautiful. And this is why we're doing, that's why we call it Honest Advent. Of when we think about Christmas, we can just fall right into our automatic rhythms of what we've always done. Well, we've always celebrated this way. We've always wore the matching pajamas on this day, instead of like just pause and saying, do I even really like pajamas? That should be a question all of us need to answer at some point. But when you can be honest about what you feel, you can get curious. And when you can be led by curiosity, it can lead you to new places and you can experience wonder. And this is what I love about Christmas, is that there should be wonder, there should be this magic, and the magic can be holding on from things that are nostalgic and rhythms or practices that you value and you've done as a family, but it can also come in discovering something new even in yourself. So last week we talked about bodies and how we can experience pleasure this Christmas season in and with our bodies and how important our bodies are. So obviously, if we're talking about Advent, then we need to talk about bikes. When my son Max was just a little boy, when he was learning how to ride a bike, his grandpa was helping him when we lived in Duluth, and we lived right on this little dirt road, and he tried and Max just couldn't get it. And his grandpa looked at him and goes, "Max, right, it's gonna be okay," because Max was really frustrated because he wasn't picking up, and he goes, "Every little boy eventually learns how to ride a bike." And he looks at his grandpa and he goes, "Oh, grandpa, I bet there's at least one boy in the world who can't ride a bike." He was talking about himself, right? And this is what I love about my son, Max. He can live like in this fixed reality. And regardless if it's true or not, he really believes it. And not only does he believe it, he can like argue it, and he can pull out data that he just makes up out of nowhere. And he just, with his whole being, he's like, no, this is, it's Taco Tuesday, Dad. We eat tacos on Tuesday, right? He can just hold on to that. And it's this fierceness that I really love about him. But it got me thinking of, like, we all live in some sort of fixed reality to some degree of where we know what's right and wrong, what's good and evil, how we celebrate, how we show up, what we question, what we don't question, words we use, words we don't use, how we dress. Like, there's things, and that's not always bad. That's good, because then you know where you fit in that space. You know where you fit in that family system. You know where you belong, and you can go through your day. But then there's things that happen that like blow up that fixed reality, right? When he finally learned how to ride a bike, and he's like, oh, maybe I'm not the only boy in the world that doesn't know how to ride a bike. But there's things that come from the outside of that lived experience, outside of that reality, that kind of blow things up. Like, clearly, hundreds and hundreds of people drive to Superior to go eat at Hardee's, right? My friend Steve Hamlin loves him some Hardee's. And so every time Steve goes to Hardee's, he's in his fixed reality. He knows he's going to get a great burger for a little bit of money, but he also knows there's never going to be parking because Chris Sauter talks about Hardee's so much, it's always packed. So in his world, he just knows, I will never get a parking space, and I have to go park at Video Vision. And so he pulls up, right, and already expecting nothing good to happen, and right there, right by the door, there is a parking spot. And Steve Hamlin would yell, or probably sing, it's a Christmas miracle, right? We can throw that word out for basically anything, right? Like, Velveeta cheese is so silky smooth, it's a miracle. No, that one's actually just science and chemicals, right? But we can use this word, and it just really just means something outside of my normal rhythm, outside of my lived experience, something I did not anticipate or even know or I even think could happen, happens. And we live in a world of miracles. I believe in miracles. And the Christmas story is just packed full of miracles. In fact, the Christmas story starts with a miracle. And a very unlikely one. One that we kind of gloss over. And we're talking about virgin birth. Words that we don't always slam next to each other, right? And you can even hear that word and think, oh yeah, Mary, you know, Holy Mother Mary, you know, virgin birth. And you can just like skip over it, just like Chris Sauter looks really clean today. And you're like, yeah, of course he does. He always looks tip-top shape, right? What am I talking about? Oh yeah, so virgin birth, right? We just, like, what if we really got honest about it? What if we got really, like, curious about why? And does it make sense? And I'm going to tell a story about how I got really sweaty when people asked me if I really believed in it. But first, we're going to read the story out of Luke chapter 1. And if you'd like to follow along, you can. I'm reading out of the NIV. God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to her a man named Joseph. I thought it said married to her man. I'm like, these are very woke. Luke is pretty woke. I should not give commentary on the Bible. To a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He will be great, and you will be called the Son of Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be, Mary?" asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." The angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age, and she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her sixth month. For no word from God will ever fail." "I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." Then the angel left her. Virgin. Luke goes out of his way to mention a couple 13, 14 times that Mary is a virgin. And how it starts is with fear, because that's what healthy people do. The angel, I doubt, didn't like start off in the distance like, I am Gabriel, an angel, like far away. So like quietly and just quite a little bit loud, like, really, Mary, I'm an angel, I am coming. Right? To like warm up. I'm like, what's outside? Do you guys hear that? Oh, there's an angel coming, right? It's like probably her like slamming an Instagram, right? Smash that like button and all of a sudden like, boom, angel, right? And that would scare her because that's how it works. But it's also met with fear of saying, you're going to have this amazing kid that's going to transform the history of mankind. And she's like, hold on a second, little problem. I am a virgin, right? And this story gives this paradox. Right? That gives this two ways of seeing, two things that can be true exist at the same time. And this is something as the Jesus story, as the Christ that I personally love, is that it's the Bible's full of paradoxes, right? Like, just take Jesus. Jesus is fully God and fully man. And to me, this is critically important because if Jesus was just man, right, then it was just some guy that had some really woke things to say about loving people and some really cool stuff, right? And that's it. And if Jesus was just fully God and not man, then there's this connection I feel, like we say often, actually I've said it for a long time, that we have a me too God, that whatever you feel, whatever you embody, the Christ has already experienced that. The fullness of the human experience was lived by Jesus, the Christ. And for me, it brings me comfort's not the right word. I feel seen because like God is not just this idea. God is not just somewhere else. That this God like came like and lived inside Mary. And those two things, God and man, fully God, fully man, can exist at the same time. And I don't need to like explain it away. There was a time in my life where I felt like I had to defend every little thing because if you were certain, then you had faith. And that kind of faith was highly celebrated in evangelical movement. Highly, highly celebrated. And of like the more, we call it apologetics. But we don't need to define it. And that same paradox, that same miracle, that somehow the divine brought salvation, brought life, brought this kingdom, interwoven like the supernatural with the natural, with the divine to the human flesh, the blood, like inside of a Middle Eastern teenage girl. And in that body, God made its home and came as a human, meaning that fully God, fully baby still was dependent to nurse off of another human body. That God was vulnerable, God was weak, that God was small, that God was probably even tolerated at times as a toddler, that God maybe got nervous talking to the guy or the girl, right? That God maybe had acne. I love that. And it all started with a virgin birth. It all started with a body. And in Mary, in that miracle, in that paradox, was new life, which is what we all want. But it's funny because I remember, I don't know, many years ago, someone having a conversation. It was really good. We weren't like theologically debating. Let me talk you out of your belief system. But the guy's like, Chris, just like, I want you to hear the words. Like you say you really love God and you're a Christian, you're a pastor. Like, do you really believe that God impregnated Mary? Right? That the Holy Spirit came over her, the shadow came over her, and then God like put a child inside of her. And when he was saying it, I was like, I seriously started sweating. I'm like, oh my gosh, this does sound nuts. have you ever been there? Of like, you say out loud or you're reading a story in the Bible, like when you read the book of Acts and it has those two people that lie about how much money they have, right? And then they drop dead. I read that story, I'm like, this is nuts. How many times have I lied? Zero, and not died, right? And so like when you actually like take a moment, get curious and think about, yeah, that is virgin birth, that is nuts. And I don't need, in the same way fully God, fully man, I don't need to defend it. I believe it. Today I believe in the virgin birth. And I don't always know why. But I don't always need to. Like this. Let me get a drink. There's things that we can defend. There's things that we know where something beautiful, new life can come from. Like if you want to get stronger, you can do push-ups every day and you would get a little bit stronger. You could practice Spanish 10 minutes every day and imagine a year, you'd probably be able to speak Spanish a little bit more. There's things we can, like cause and effect, we just understand it. But then there's things we can't always describe. And I thought about this a lot this week. It was actually really good. I can tell you that I love my wife, Nikki. And I could tell you all the ways that I've shown her love. I could tell you all the reasons why I would give up everything for her. I could tell you even the moment I fell in love with her in ninth grade. Opened up the door. I told the story just recently at the winter formal. And she was, my best friend was standing in the door and she stole my heart and I never got it back. That is the moment I knew that I was going to be with her for the rest of my life. But if you ask me, Chris, well, why do you love her? I could stumble through some like words I saw on the internet that might make me sound intelligent. I can't pinpoint and get really down of this is why I love her. But at some point, I surrender to that love and I let that love be my teacher. And I go back to that deep, mystical love of loving my best friend, of loving Nikki, and let that move me. And let that like lead me. Because it's in that space I experienced new life with my wife. It's like when I had kids, the moment I loved all my kids, when I looked in their eyes, they were strangers in the belly, right? In utero. And we called all our babies in utero, we called them all Death Star. I don't even like Star Wars. That sounds like that's probably something clinical with me. Yeah, what do you mean this baby's Death Star mean it's going to destroy all life from here on out? That's maybe what I was feeling. But when I saw them in the eyes for the first time, each single one of them, it opened a door in my life, in my heart, of this whole new way of existing, of this whole new love that I didn't know existed. And I love that. And so like I could tell you how I love my kids, but why do I love my kids? I imagine there's some evolutionary process and answer of how we want to continue human life to sustain beyond us. And so, but I imagine like that goes this far and there's a whole more depth of why. Why do I love my kids? I don't exactly know. But I know that deep love, if I surrender to it, if I let that love be my teacher, it brings me to new places of love and life and beauty that I didn't have before. And so the virgin birth, I've had a lot of conversations, very, very good ones, about like the miracles of Jesus and how there could just be positive stories. And there's people I know that believe that it works for them. Like, but to say, well, there can't be miracles. Again, I should say this. I grew up in a what I call the crazy church. It was this very hyper-Pentecostal church when I was like 10. Is that even a word, hyper-Pentecostal? I think Pentecostal automatically just assumes that it's going to be hyper. But they would like have like healing moments. I remember one time this special prophet healer came to the church and sat me in a chair and was like, okay, Chris, we're going to pray that God grows your leg longer. I'm like, okay, that's not something I ask for. And he just like took my shoe and like just moved it. He's like, look, Chris, your leg is growing. I'm like, no, brah, you're just moving my shoe. And from that experience and other ones, I'm very cynical, honestly, when it comes to people saying, oh, I've experienced this miracle. And I myself have experienced a physical healing. I could tell you the story later, right? Like, it was crazy. I've seen people's lives. One in particular, me and another guy were praying for just some dude. And you could feel the transformation like night and day when we got done praying for him. I can't explain. There's been things that people who've barely known me come up and said things. Hey, I feel like God is doing this. I feel like God might be sensing this. Again, growing up in a crazy experience where people abuse prophecy all the time, where I'm like, not for me, man. And they read my mail. Like, I can't explain. I believe in miracles, but I'm still cynical, right? But I choose to believe in miracles because if we had to say, no, we have an explanation for everything. Like we really can explain and define every single thing that happens in this universe. That would be a cold universe. That'd be a cold and calculated universe. Because miracles are happening. And you could call like the Hardee's parking spot a miracle. And then there's other people saying, no, until I grow that like that sixth thumb, like, no, then that's not really a miracle. You're waiting for some huge thing where miracles are literally happening every single day all around you. Because when we experience, when love is withdrawn from us, when you laugh with your friend over Zoom, right? That's called being relevant. When you see a beautiful piece of art, when you receive that gift, when you get to hug that little furry friend and that love comes out of you, that's heaven. And when we engage the heaven, we engage the supernatural, that, my friend, in of itself is a miracle. It's happening everywhere. It's happening in you right now. And how Mary responds, right? She says, it's impossible. It can't happen. I'm a virgin. Gabriel goes through this whole long list of things. In the ESV, he says that Gabriel ends by saying, nothing is impossible for God. And Mary responds by saying, then let it be me. Let it be me who's faithful to your word. And where some of you need new life. Some of you need a miracle. Some of you feel like it is impossible right now during COVID to be loved. Some of you feel like it's impossible to have hope. Some of you feel like it's just, you are not worth kindness. That you feel like you're just tolerated in your job. You just feel tolerated in your relationship. You feel tolerated by God. And you feel like there's just no hope. This is just how it has to be. Some of us feel like I'm going to wake up with that pain in my leg for the rest of my life. It will never go away. I'm going to deal with fill in the blank. Some of us need a miracle. And maybe it'll be this radical transformation, or maybe it would feeling like just a sense of hope even for a moment. Both of them are beautiful. Both of them are sacred. And where it can start is surrendering to that deep love, surrendering to that mystical, that mystical world. Even the idea of a virgin birth, of that God came so close, and all Mary had to do is say, let it be me. So I'm going to pray. And if you are in need, right? Like, yeah. Even my friends, the Davies, I see Emily is watching, of experiencing horrible, tragic things with COVID, right? It touches everything. Some of us, you might need a miracle. And that miracle, my friends, is already within. And if we can surrender to it, we can say, let it be me. I'm going to pray. If that's you, however you connect with the divine, I encourage you to do so. So God, we welcome you and we love you and we worship you. And I love the whole idea of that we can place ourselves in the middle of a paradox. We can place ourselves in right in the middle of multiple truths all at once. And instead of saying, oh, now I can articulate, I can define it, I can defend it, we can just simply sit in front of it, sit with you, and let that love, let that mystery, let that beautiful picture of Emmanuel, and let it be our teacher. And I love that there is infinite levels of knowing God, that mystery of there's just more and more to be experienced, that new life happens every second, every moment, in every breath. So we say, let it be me. It feels impossible. It feels distant. It feels scary. It feels, maybe from your past experience of spirituality, it feels really messy. For my friends who are walking through disorder, deconstruction, it can feel like, no, I don't do that anymore. God, we say in this space, let it be me. Faithful to your word. Your humble servant. Will you come? God, will you come near to us and place in us new life today? So we love you. Amen. I'm always sad when I get them praying. I love this space with you, friends. We are going to close with another song. But friends, thank you for being in this sacred space with us. If we can do anything to partner with you and to be on your team, to be on your side, please don't hesitate to reach out. We'd love to be able to connect. Merry Christmas.
Out of chaos, life is being found.